This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Matt, Brett here today. Brett, it is, okay, so we're not a sports station, but we got, a lot of sports coming up this weekend. Homecoming for the Gophers, right? I believe that is with Bowling Green.
I actually didn't know they had a home game this weekend. I don't keep up to much on the Gopher football team, as you can tell.
Well, I don't think most of the listeners do either. That's why we're bringing, I think they play Bowling Green. They're favored by 31.
Bowling Green must not be very good then.
Okay, so I went out to Bowling Green University. My wife got her graduate degree out there. And we were driving. This is when we drove the kids. We were going down I think it was the first time we drove down to South Carolina, right after my parents had moved down there. And we decided to do a swing through Washington, D.C., just so they could see the monuments and all that stuff. And so we, it kind of was a natural stop point. We stopped near Bowling Green. Actually had a big boy in Bowling Green. And we actually stopped at the big boy, which was, that was probably the best part. All you need to know about Bowling Green is, what's the colors of Bowling Green?
I imagine green.
No, what? It is not. It's orange.
Why?
I don't know. That is your okay, that's an easy layup there, kids. And if you can't hit that, come on.
We're the Boston Red Sox, but our colors are going to be yellow and blue or something.
Well, they did that one for the marathon, which that looked weird, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the sentiment was right, but just as far as the Red Sox uniform go, okay.
Yeah, if a color's in your name, that should probably be the color of your team.
You would think so, but I can tell someone where it was, aha, we're going to be smarter than that. Are you? Are you really?
No. That must be why they're not favored to win.
Vikings are going to lose by how much?
I have a strange feeling just because they're the Vikings, they're going to pull out a win this weekend to get our hopes up. I'm not saying they're going to all of a sudden turn things around. They're going to get a random win this week, and then they'll lose like three more in a row.
It is remarkable how, you think to yourself, you watch these games, and you're saying, hey, they're at least holding their own. They're holding there. And then last plays, last drives, every time, don't. I can't believe they missed a layup of a kick last week. Just, oh, God, was that. And like I said, last week was just, you could hear the people, the heartbreak. If they lose to the Seattle Seahawks, I just don't think the question is going to, there's going to be, I think there's going to have to be some major changes on a team. And I like Zim. I do. I like Zimmer. But I think that the front office and this are just, I mean, you can't have two seasons in a row where you start off just absolutely pathetic.
You go 0-3. I mean, the team's probably going to tune out the coach, too, at that point.
Like,
what are we playing for?
I know the truth is, I think a lot of this goes back to the stupid I'll call you guys this, the dumb anti-vaxxers on that team who just thought they were, we don't want to, just talk about lack of unity, talk about lack of leadership. And as someone pointed out, it's like, talk about the fact that you have a lot of kids in the community looking up to you, and here you are saying, don't get vaccinated. And that's what you're saying. And you can say, I'm just saying this is for ourselves. I hope other people do. I mean, make your own choices. No, you missed the easy kick then, too. And so, good news, Wild Hockey. They got the first preseason game, St. Louis, with Kaprizov. They finally fixed the Western Conference now. So Arizona's now within the Central Division, and they've got the Seattle Kraken starting this year in Seattle.
Wait, how is Arizona in the Central?
As Minnesota constantly gets thrown out into Western conferences, like in the MLS, I don't mind. It was either them. Well, I mean, okay, I'll say this for without a doubt, they got jobbed because the NHL did not want to separate Calgary and Edmonton.
Oh, yeah.
And so they wanted to keep them together. So they kept Calgary and Edmonton in the West. And Arizona Phoenix, who I believe is a further West team than either of those, is moved into the Central. So
can't wait till they put a Minnesota team in the Pacific Division or something. Oh, gosh. Sport coming up.
You're playing Alaska tonight? Great. So, and then MLS, a lot of sports going on. I'm going to actually, you know, with all the sports going on, I'm going to make a pledge with you. Get outside at some point. The leaves are starting to change here in the cities. I was just down today on the beautiful Mississippi Riverfront, freshest garbage you'll ever smell. yeah, you might want to get a litter crew down there. Just, I'm going to say, welcome to the city. There's a point. You know what I'm talking about? You know where the University of Minnesota rowing team, you know where their building is? Right down there. It's on the campus, right on the riverfront. You got to go down, and there's a park. You can park down there, and you can go. There's a hiking trail down there.
Oh, right, really? On the river. I've seen photos of it. I just don't know where it is.
The picture I took that's of me in the calendar, that I took on that trail last year. That was that one. This shockingly weird picture of me. But you get down there, and there's these cute little, you know, waterfalls and rivers and creeks that are coming off the side with tons of graffiti all over it. And I said, if that was ever to give a picture of Minneapolis, that's it right there. You know, just a natural, pretty waterfall with tons of graffiti. There you go. A few, you know, blank the police as well up there. Why not? It's Minneapolis. Here you go. There it is, the city. But I was down there and noticing some of the leaves there on the riverbanks starting to go, which is nice. It's such a pretty city in fall. If we get the colors, oh, it is one of the most spectacularly beautiful cities in fall, period. Hands down. So get on out. Is there a place that you like to go that you see color?
You can go anywhere. I mostly go up by the either Dakota Rail Trail, Loose Line, out in the west side.
I was going to tell you because you do the biking. You do tons of biking. Brett bikes like crazy. You get out there on the bikes. Those bike trails are some of the best leaf viewing you can find. Oh, yeah. They're spectacular. I mean, and really, unless you're on the trail, you would have no idea how beautiful they are at times. So if you haven't been on out, I mean, they've got like 16 trails on the West Metro. Find one. Off you go. Have a great time.
Yeah, the Loose Line goes all the way out to, I think, to New Germany. So you can really get your workout in if you want to ride like 60 miles.
Well, the problem is at the end of that, you're in New Germany. So I've been in New Germany. I was in New Germany like a month ago, and it's like half the bars were closed. I'm like, okay, if you're New Germany and you don't have bars, what's the point here?
Especially at the end of a bike trail, you would think you want
something.
Bars there.
Or bratwurst hut. I mean, hey, you know, that's playing to the stereotype, but it's a stereotype I think we all could enjoy. The bratwurst hut in New Germany, all day long, man, all day long. I'd be there. So there you go. Get on out. Try to enjoy some of the leaves and, you know, and do like I do on Sunday night going, hey, the Gophers won. Oh, okay. Hey, the Vikings won at some point this weekend. Oh, that's nice. Or the Vikings lost. Or there you go. Your life is better for it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Brett, who do we have coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour with you?
We got Brad Coker. He is the guy who conducted all of these polls you've been seeing released that I think technically responsible by like four media organizations.
Care 11 starts again. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so he was the guy in charge of that poll. So we're going to chat with him about some of the data, what it means for 2022. It's some interesting thoughts because the numbers obviously aren't good for Biden, but ultimately the question is, how is that going to look if Trump's playing a big role in 2022? Because even though independents have kind of turned against Trump, or Biden rather, are they really going to go for a Republican with Trump still being the figurehead of the party?
I don't know if they so much. I mean, I didn't take that as they turned so much against Biden. I mean, I think Walz is in a little bit of a precarious position.
Yeah.
But I think Biden is relatively fine. And especially when you look at that one poll number, they said it's how many people think that Biden won fair and square. And I guarantee you today, we'll get to it. Arizona, you know, come on. It's just, you look, the longer this goes on, the more pathetic he looks. And yet we have someone now in the state of Minnesota kind of pushing, now we need to do our own autopsy or whatever they want to call it on these, on the elections.
I'm going in with no information, but I'm guessing, was it Mary Kiffmeyer making the push?
No, it wasn't. You're not far off. Catcher's mitt.
Oh, who's that again?
Gruenhagen.
Oh, yes.
The human catcher's mitt. Take a look at his head, man. Seriously. It's like right in there. Give me a curveball. All right. The human catcher's mitt, Glenn Gruenhagen. No, basically quoting a stat which was knowingly falsely put forward just so they can say, we need to go after it. Shut up.
How did Kiffmeyer let him beat her to the punch on that one?
Oh, I don't know. Kiffmeyer's still licking her wounds with that whole Minnesota Historical Society thing where she tried to, because how dare you call it Bedote How dare you call it Bedote? How dare you call it Bede Mikaska? Get that Columbus statue back up there. How did that work out for you there, Mayor? Oh, that's right. Pretty much everyone laughed at you and told you to shut up and sit down. You know, that's right. So you're kind of a laughing stock outside of your own district, which, you know. All right, whatever. Okay, so as you can tell, I'm trying to avoid talking about the first update for the day, Minnesota coronavirus update. Here we go. Friday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,997 new cases. Holy God. 27 newly reported deaths. 22 occurred in them this month. Now, you remember, we were, you know, before Memorial Day, we were down to maybe a few hundred cases each day. I think we had some days where we didn't have one person die. 22 people, 22 deaths occurred 1 month, in this month. And then the other five were a person that were, their deaths were finally added to the list. One of the dead was a person from Hennepin County, aged 20 to 25. The state's death toll is 8,076 since the start of the pandemic. As of September 22nd, the state reported 3,386,985 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,213,208 people have completed their vaccine series. Through September 23rd, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 752. That's down from 777 reported on Thursday, 794 reported on Wednesday. Of those hospitalized, 213 people are in intensive care, 539 were in general hospital care. It should be mentioned as well, the numbers generally coming in on Monday and Tuesday of next week are where we're really going to have to pay attention. The 2,997 positive results in Friday's update were from 49,883 completed tests, creating a test positive rate of 6.01. When you factor this all in here, the test positive rate over the past 7 days has been 7.20. So, and once again, 5.0. And we were down to 1% positivity rate. Just disturbing. Here it gets even worse. The St. Cloud area, week after week it is in the spring had some of the state's lowest percentages of vaccinated residents, is now seeing a surge in new cases that is forcing the primary hospital to expand its intensive care unit and delay medical care for those dealing with other illnesses and emergencies. What did I just talk about yesterday? My biggest fear, because I got a hip replacement surgery I'm going to be doing coming up here in October. And my biggest fear is that because of enough knuckleheads, enough fools that are just choosing not to get vaccinated, that they're basically the hospital services are starting to get compromised. And here it is in St. Cloud. And yeah, this is what I'm afraid of, is that eventually we're going to get to a point where all of a sudden St. Cloud can't handle them all. So they're either turning people away or they're having to ship people down into the Twin Cities. Hey. The number of new COVID-19 cases in the central Minnesota counties of Stearns, Benton, and Sherburn has grown to about 12% since the end of June, when spread of the disease was waning and cases plateauing. Since that time, the area's death toll has increased from 418 to 450, with 8 new deaths reported since Tuesday in the 3 counties. "We are tired. We're having good nurses leave and having lots of folks cut back on their hours," said Dr. Jacob Lyons, critical care specialist at St. Cloud Hospital, which is one of CentraCare's main health hubs. "We have a shortage. It's not physical beds or ventilators or supplies, things we worried about early in the pandemic. It's nurses to take care of the critically ill folks." And you can't blame them. And I'm sorry, you can't. What we have put the medical professionals in this country through, including the doctors, the nurses, all the support staff, the freaking interns, everyone, that what we have put them through in the last year and a half is inexcusable. And now for them, who have worked so hard to try to get this pandemic shut down, to have to all of a sudden see, because of stupid people screaming at them about, "You need to give my uncle horse dewormer in his butt," and telling them, "I'm sorry, it's not going to work. You should have been vaccinated." I don't blame them. The PTSD that the medical industry is going to suffer from after this whole thing is over is going to be cataclysmic. And this whole situation is going to dramatically change medicine, because I think you're going to get a lot of people who are going to leave. Because what's the point in doing this? You used to do this because it was one of those things where you went to a hospital and people respected the doctors, respected the nurses, they respected the science. And today, you can have some absolute drooling moron put out a podcast and says, I think horse dewormer is a better option than getting vaccinated. And because these people are so desperate to not admit getting vaccinated is right, which they think is the Dems winning, the liberals winning, they will run to the horse dewormer guy and act as if, oh, yeah, this is making a lot of sense to me. Just idiots. Just morons. And these people, these nurses and these doctors, and you saw it last year when the story, and the first one that really kind of broke my heart, was the woman in South Dakota, the nurse in South Dakota, who was trying their hardest to get this individual to call their family and say goodbye because he was dying, and he's screaming at them through coughing fits, it's a myth! And she's like, I can't believe this. You're actually dying of the disease. And you still yet can't believe it. And that guy is dead. That guy died. And at no point did he ever call family and friends and said goodbye. Not once. Going back to Dr. Jacob Lyons, we have a shortage. It's not physical beds or ventilators or supplies. It's nurses to take care of the critically ill folks. In the past 2 months, the number of inpatients being treated at COVID-19 at CentraCare and its subsidiary Caris Health has fluctuated from 50 to 70 patients, according to Dr. George Morris, CentraCare's COVID-19 Incident Response Commander. CentraCare is a healthcare system with 8 hospitals, more than 30 clinics in central Minnesota, as well as Caris Health facilities in west central and southwest Minnesota. On Monday, 62 inpatients were being treated for COVID-19. Of those, 57 were unvaccinated and 5 were vaccinated. Yet another series of numbers which show, dear Lord, get vaccinated, and yet, no! The hospital's lying! It wasn't that bad! 90% of our patients with COVID are unvaccinated, and even the ones who are vaccinated, they're 65 and above, and we know those were the cases where they trended to not have strong immune response or as long of immune response, Morris added. 90% of the people being seen in St. Cloud hospitals unvaccinated. 90%. And yet, I'm never going to get vaccinated. The St. Cloud area has had months lag behind the state for COVID-19 vaccinations rates, and at times has had the lowest percentage of vaccinated residents. I'll tell you what, I'll have more on this when I do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. So you have St. Cloud hospitals now getting overwhelmed, and it shouldn't be a surprise. I posted this story earlier today on the social media. COVID-19 case rates increased in 49 of 87 Minnesota counties in a weekly statewide report released on Thursday, with the highest rates generally located in greater Minnesota, specifically northwestern, west central, and southern areas. County case rates are based on the number of confirmed cases in a week. Per week, 10,000 people versus 10,000 people. The latest data represents positive cases from September 5th to 11th, for which there are 26 counties with cases rates above 30 in that range. Anything over 10 is a signal that there is a widespread community transmission. So once again, if you are over 10 out of 10,000, you are looking at a fairly substantial community transmission rate. Cochinchin County, up in the very northern part of the state, 53.8 cases per 10,000. That is out of control in that county. Monument, 50.9. Steele, 49.9. Freeburn, 47.8. Wadena, 45.4. Waseca, 43.1. Stevens, 42.9. Cass 41.7, Pennington 40.2, and Beltrami 37.9. Once again, 10 would be the warning sign area. Coochachin County and Monomin County are 5 times worse than the warning level. Is it any wonder? Is it any wonder the St. Cloud hospitals are getting overwhelmed because stupid people refuse it? If you look at it, what's even more striking, if you look at the Bring Me the News story that I posted, it is what is really striking is they put it on the map. And what you see here is undeniable. Republican areas where the Republicans have basically downplayed the importance of vaccines, downplayed the importance of masks, basically gone and embraced the lunatic fringe and conspiracy theories. In those areas, just draw a letter C, starting at Coochachin County up on the northern side, go all the way to the west, and then come back around on the southern border. That's it. That's where all the bad counties are. The only bad county on the eastern side of the state is Chisago County, I believe that is, just northeast of the metro area, just north of Washington County. Just unbelievable how predictable this was, and here we are. Case rates in the 7-county Twin Cities metro area also indicate widespread community transmission ongoing, but not at the level seen in the rural counties. Give you an idea, Ramsey County is at 15.4, so 10% is the warning sign. They're at 15, not 50. Ramsey's at 16, or Hennepin's at 16.8, Dakota 19.6, Washington 20.4. On Thursday, the latest figures from the Minnesota Department of Health show that only 37.5% of new COVID cases came from the 7-county Twin Cities metro area, which comprises 55% of the total population of Minnesota. So once again, let's put this into perspective here. The 7-county metro area is well over half the population of the state, but we're only accounting for 37% of the new cases, which means the rates of infection in these areas where the stupid people keep saying, vaccines are going to magnetize my cow, that they basically are out of control. And considering how sparsely populated some of these counties are, to have the numbers they're at is terrifying. It's no wonder these healthcare systems are starting to get overwhelmed. 37.5. Can I just get one Republican, one single Republican to come on out and say, hey, dude, man, the horse dewormer you're putting up your butt. Don't do that. That's just insanity. Go get vaccinated. Can I get one Republican? One Republican to, hey, I got an announcement to make. You shouldn't be taking the vet supplies. Go get vaccinated. All right? Done. One Republican. Nope. Not at all. It is terrifying. And on top of that, hey, on top of that incredibly positive story, let's go on out there and talk. Counties that do not require face masks in K-12 schools have seen a sharper increase in child COVID cases than those who do have face mask mandates in school. Ta-da! From the School of No Blank Sherlock. That's according to a study released on Friday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which looked at how pediatric COVID cases in counties with and without school mask mandates changed over the opening weeks of the school year. Child COVID cases rose across the board, but those counties that did not implement a school masking requirement experienced larger increases in pediatric COVID-19 case rates compared to those in the mask mandate. The counties, once again, personal responsibility. Personal responsibility. It sucks. It's not saving anyone. The counties with a K-12 mask mandate saw an average of 16.32 child COVID cases per 100,000 children each day. Those without any face coverings mandate saw an average of 34.85. In case you did not take that K-12 math class, that's twice as bad. It's twice as bad in schools without a mask mandate than it is in schools with a mask mandate. It's twice as bad. The study ultimately included 520 counties, about 62% of which do not have a mask requirement. Just unbelievable. On the one bit of positive news, Minnesotans seeking Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine booster shots might get them quicker at pharmacies than at large healthcare systems. That's according to state health officials. Up to 1 million Minnesotans are expected to become eligible for the Pfizer booster once 6 months have passed since they received their second dose. All right, I got to figure this out in my own head here. April, May, June. Hey! That means I can. It's looking pretty good for me sometime in October, getting that booster shot. Go team, go! Well, I don't know if I actually will qualify. If you want to know the truth, under recommendations issued Thursday night by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Pfizer boosters are recommended for those 65 and older, as well as 50 to 64 who have underlying health conditions that put them in high risk for severe COVID-19 infection. The health conditions include cancer, chronic kidney conditions, obesity, diabetes, Down syndrome, heart conditions, and liver disease, among many others. Additionally, those 18 to 49 with underlying health conditions and those who work in settings that may expose them to COVID-19 are eligible to get the booster vaccine. Yay, good. However, the CDC did not list which occupations would qualify for the booster. Instead, said people should consult with their doctor. What the CDC is saying, there should be an individual assessment about who is at high risk. And I think that that's the case. I mean, if you are a medical professional and they say, hey, we got, say, 40 doses, and they want to try to save those for people who are 65 and older, I can completely understand that. And I can completely understand that. You know, absolutely. And it depends. I mean, and that's the case. It depends on how many booster shots they've got. But I could tell you right now, the second I can get my booster shot, I will. You know, if those idiots out in the rural parts of the country, Alabama lost population last year because of, for the first time ever, Alabama actually lost population because of COVID last year. You know, they're going to end up owning the libs to their graves, aren't they? That's it. Absolutely. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. We'll get into some other topics when I do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So yesterday, it's so funny because yesterday on the show, okay, so on Wednesday we had Schechter in. And Schechter was like, he was angry because he felt as if, you know, why isn't there more attention being spent on the fact that we had a coup attempt in the United States? And we talked about what was then, you know, I've gone over it a few times, the November 14th memo, which the Trump campaign and the Trump White House knew about, which the memo was from Trump's own lawyers who basically had done their own research on any of the claims of voter fraud that were starting to float around after the election. And their own lawyers went back to Trump, his Trump campaign, and the Trump White House and said, there's no there. There is no validity to any of these arguments that the election was stolen. So they knew on the 14th of November that there was no fraud. So anything they did to continue that mentality afterwards, especially as they led up to January 6th, was part of a coup attempt to overthrow the government of the United States. It's just plain and simple. And Schechter was upset because, once again, he's like, why is the media focusing on the simplest and smallest little quirks on Biden when you have this massive scandal? And historically, people are going to look back on this moment for centuries about the guy that tried to overthrow the government. I mean, It really is going to be one of those things where regardless of what happens, anyone that's associated this is going to be forever going to be tarnished for sure. Now, what I came back and I said yesterday is I said, okay, first of all, you got to remember this stuff doesn't just happen overnight. It just doesn't happen overnight. Watergate, the break-in at Watergate happened in, 71? And it wasn't until 74 that Nixon resigned. August of 74, Nixon resigned. And I reminded people that in those first coverage of Watergate, basically Woodward and Bernstein were the only ones covering it. No one thought there was a story there. And they kept saying, no, there's something here. When they uncovered the ties to the Nixon re-election, re-elect Nixon campaign, and this, they knew, they were saying, okay, there's something here. And it is truly a remarkable, and if you've never read some of the stories those guys were putting out at the time, they're all, you can find them, they're all archived, and you can read the stories they were saying, and you as you read it and know what we know today, you're like, wow, why was no one else on this? There's a great scene in All the President's Men where their editor is saying, you know, they're having the meeting of the editors, and it's like, we're the only ones that are talking about this. And it's like, why, you know, people are saying, why are you guys even continually talking about that? There's no there. And the reality is that, you know, he says, no, let's stay with the story. And they kept with it. And of course, eventually that ended up being the downfall of Nixon. These things don't just happen. And as that civil trial, and I pointed out, the reason we now know about the November 14th memo was because the Trump officials had to turn over documents for the civil trial where they accused Dominion of cheating and fixing the election. And this is not a this is not a court case brought by Dominion, but by a former employee of Dominion who has felt defamed, libeled, you know, in the case of the Trump campaign. They basically said that he was part of this big conspiracy that just did not exist. And so he sued him individually in civil court, which basically they don't really have too many ways around things there. They have to turn over documents. They have to. So that's why we know about this. The courts will take care of Donald Trump. The courts will. And I said, just give it time. Eventually, now I can't guarantee anyone on the Republican side is going to care about this. I can't guarantee that anyone on the Republican side is going to care. I mean, these are people, I mean, and Trump knew it. He said, I could shoot someone in the middle of Sixth Avenue and they won't do a damn thing about it. They'll say he was brave, or they'll basically go on and say the other person deserved it. You know, that is just who these people are. And it comes down to a simple thing. Trump allowed the ugliness of the far right to become a virtue. And so the racism, the bigotry, the hatred, the vindictive nature of hoping ill will against your enemies, that was embraced as a virtue. And that was told is that that is a good thing. And so the cockroaches were told, you don't have to scramble when the light gets turned on in the kitchen anymore. You can stay out. And they have. And now they don't want to go back into the shadows. They like the fact that they feel as if they've been vindicated by Trump. And they want this to be the new standard of America. And so this is why they are so desperate to basically find some way to turn Trump into a legitimacy, is because, and they know, and by the way, most of these people know that Trump is a nightmare. It just is that they to face reality, they have to admit, well, maybe I'm the bad guy. The fact that I have allowed this, I've enabled this to continue to go on. I was wrong. And they just can't do it. And they are so committed to this. They will kill off their own family. They will kill off their own family in a heartbeat. They will make a mockery of their religion. They will lose their house. They will lose their car. They will lose their farm. They will lose everything that they have got. Because at the end of the day, the one thing they are incapable of doing is looking in the mirror and saying, boy, was I wrong. And so this is the hill they are going to die on. So I don't know if any of this is going to change any of their opinions. But you still have to find the truth. And the reality is the vast majority of us are not going to shy away from the truth. Just the people who basically have been enabled. So I find it very funny. So I brought this up yesterday. It's like, give it time. Get the courts in there. I found it very funny that as soon as I got home, the news broke. A new round of subpoenas showed the House Select Committee is investigating events that led up to the January 6th insurrection, and lawmakers have a pretty clear idea of which Donald Trump loyalists played the biggest role in the attack. Oh, please. The panel requested records and testimony from former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, former White House strategist Steve Bannon, who basically over the last 2 days, that idiot's admitted it on his own podcast. Yeah, we planned this out. Wow, thanks. I'll just put your podcast in on as Exhibit A. Good luck. I can't wait for Bannon. Did Bannon get a pardon? I thought he got a pardon. I can't wait for Bannon to basically say, "Oh, that pardon's retroactive to everything. I can do anything." I can't wait for, because that's coming. You know that is. Former Trump director of Deputy Chief of Staff and Director of Social Media Dan Scavino, who's a slimeball, and former Pentagon official and Trump loyalist, Cash App Patel. And the subpoenas show lawmakers looking beyond the insurrection. Among other things, those requests show the committee is investigating the communications various security agencies had with the White House and with each other, wrote Hunter Walker for the magazine. And also examining personnel changes at some of these agencies, including the installation of Patel, a Trump loyalist who was placed in the Pentagon in the days after the election, and the firing of Homeland Security Cyber Security Chief Christopher Krebs, who loudly refuted Trump's suggestion there was election fraud at play in his defeat. The committee also won, and it should be also mentioned, that remember, there was a lot of cabinet members who left, in those last few months, who I think got wind what was going on and just did not want to be there and part of it. And you got to remember that, too. This was coordinated and planned, and Patel especially, at the Defense Department. The committee also wants to see the records related to gathering and sharing intelligence before the attack, as well as security plans for the Capitol and any changes made to the way the agencies monitor social media for threats before the Stop the Steal rally was preceding the attack. Those record requests also indicate the committee is looking beyond just the attack on January 6th. The committee specifically requested records related to demonstrations against the election that were staged by Trump supporters in D.C. on November 14th and December 12th and January 5th of this year. It was also asked for documents related to attempts that Trump associates, including New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, former mayor Rudy Giuliani, and lawyer Sidney Powell, made to allege election fraud, as well as documents related to efforts to solicit Justice Department intervention on multiple states. It's very realistic that Giuliani and Powell actually saw the November 14th memo. And so then the question comes in is, if you saw the November 14th memo, a memo from the lawyers from the Trump campaign, which basically said there was no validity to any of these claims, who then told you to continue with the claims? And that's going to be an interesting question. The FBI's investigation so far is focused on the Trump supporters who stormed the Capitol, while the congressional probe seems to be focusing on the individuals who can best describe the former president's actions on that day and what steps they took. Patel is going to be a very interesting person, because I think that there's a substantial amount of questions on what he did and did not allow to happen. Because we have to remember this. The governors of Maryland and of Virginia, a Democrat and a Republican individually, were so outraged that the National Guard had not been called out, that those two states individually called out the National Guard in their own states and sent them into Washington, D.C. As Patel, I believe it was Patel, was screaming, "You don't have the authority to do this. You can't be in Washington, D.C." So Patel was basically telling them, as these people were storming the Capitol, that the people, that Maryland and Virginia, who were clearly trying to stop this, could not do so because he hadn't given them authorization. And I think they both basically said, "The heck with you, we're going to go in there and save the Capitol." And it was only after that, then all of a sudden it's like, "Oh, now I've called out the military and all these such." And then Trump came in, "I love you. You need to go home." Like it's a bar at 3 a.m. "I love you so much. No more booze. Gotta go home. Love you." Gotta remember that. Trump telling the terrorists who attacked the Capitol, "I love you. Love you." Like I said, that's the validation these people have been waiting for forever. And they got it. And it's not going to go away. Maybe, and I'm not wishing it, but maybe after Trump has passed away, maybe eventually it will fade. But at the same time, it's you know, it's kind of one of those things where I don't know how you fight this, because these people, like I said, you've validated the worst elements of our humanity, and they are not going to go back and hide willy-nilly. So we'll have to see. But needless to say, the courts don't play around. The courts are going to say, okay, you're under oath. What's the deal? And by the way, if I can make one quick suggestion about Steve Bannon, if you, Steve Bannon doesn't show up for a subpoena and you put him into contempt, put him into contempt. You can do that as the Congress. He's in contempt of the Congress at that point. Don't put him in jail. Don't. Give him like a $20,000 per day fine. Oh, delicious. Then he can't complain about being jailed wrongly. Meanwhile, a contempt of Congress charge is not going to be something you can easily go away. After, say, like 100 days at $20,000 per day, God, it's going to be funny. Hey, apparently I owe a lot of money now. I better go and talk to them. Please just do that. Don't put them in jail. Just start leveling fines per day. They'll be scrambling after a while once they realize that their GoFundMe page ain't going to get cut it anymore. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer convicted of murdering George Floyd on May 25th, is filing appeal of his convictions and his sentence. A jury in April found Chauvin guilty on all counts against him, second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter in Floyd's death. He was sentenced on June 25th to 22 and a half years in prison. Chauvin filed a notice that he intends to appeal the case with the Minnesota Court of Appeals on Thursday, the last day he could do so. In the court paperwork, he said he doesn't have the money for an attorney and is representing himself. He raises 14 issues with his trial that he intends to raise on his appeal. Now, basically, once again, what you've got going on here is, we should mention, this is the old Minneapolis police switcheroo, and it's actually not just something the police in Minneapolis do, they do it everywhere, is that when you've done something like this, you got to get yourself a quickie divorce. And you got to get a quickie divorce and then let the spouse take everything and put everything in their name so that you have nothing in your name, because then it becomes harder for the family that has been wronged, in the case of the George Floyd family, to be able to collect anything in a civil trial because I don't have any money anymore. Remember, if I'm not mistaken, this guy had a Florida home. He had a house in Florida and a place up here. So I'm not exactly sure, once again, it's just the old switcheroo. And I think basically there should be a law that says at the time that the incident occurred, anyone who is, the financial responsibility then can also go back to a soon to be divorced spouse. Because that's one of the first things the police tell you what to do. You need to get home there, and considering the severity of this charge, you need to here's what you need to do: put all the money into this account, and get everything in their name, get everything out of your name completely, including and outside of the pension, and basically they get nothing. They get nothing. Ha 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 ha. That's kind of, I'm adding the ha ha ha's, but let's face it: is anyone be surprised if they were doing the ha ha ha's at the end of that? I don't think so. He raises 14 issues with his trial that intends to raise to his appeal. He argues Judge Peter Cahill and the court abused its discretion when the motion to move the trial out of Hennepin County was denied. Well, no, they just made the call on that. When the jury wasn't sequestered throughout the entire trial, when his motion for the continuance for a new trial was denied, when it permitted the state of Minnesota to add a third-degree murder charge to the complaint, when it denied his post-verdict motion for a new trial due to juror misconduct. Chauvin says the state committed prejudicial prosecutorial misconduct, listed several issues with the jury, and argues the court erred when it allowed Morris Hall, who was in the car with Floyd the day he was killed, to invoke the Fifth Amendment and not testify for the defense. He also seeks to have the recent court decision. What are you going to do, beat Morris to death and force him to talk? He also seeks to have the recent court decision denying him a public defender overturned. Chauvin is currently incarcerated at the prison at Oak Park Heights. He claims financial hardship, saying due to his incarceration, he doesn't have the sufficient means to retain private counsel for the appeal, stating he doesn't have any income outside of prison wages. He noted that during his district court case, the Minneapolis Police and Peace Officers Association paid for his attorney, Eric Nelson, but the legal fund will no longer pay for his defense now that he's been convicted and sentenced. Well, maybe you shouldn't have killed the guy. I'm just going to say that. Maybe there are consequences. You know, do you guys concern yourself when you were a cop? Did you concern yourself ever with anyone you arrested, with their legal financial proclivity was? Did that ever come across your mind? Because I'm going to guess you never did. And we should bring up, if I can, the case of the kid yesterday where the Minnesota Human Rights Department of Human Rights found for the kid was not only discriminated against by Michaels, but then the police discriminated against him and basically abused the crud out of the kid as he was just trying to apply for a job. And you think about the amount of money that kid's family had to put forward to defend themselves with health care and any kind of trespassing charge or anything like this. Does anyone in the Minneapolis police care about the financial wherewithal of any of the people? I'm sorry, I don't care. You know, my guess is, you probably might want to ask your ex-wife if she can pay for your legal fund. Maybe she can help out, huh? Chauvin being charged in federal court with violating Floyd's civil rights. Yeah, lock him up forever. And seriously, all the rest of them as well. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. When we do come on back, we got Brett Johnson going to be joining us. Also, of course, I'm getting into the delightful story of the Arizona recount, which once again has blown up in Trump's face. Hour two up next right here on AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show once again. Matt and Brett joining us in studio here. Hi, Brett.
Hello again.
How are you, my friend?
Still as good as the last hour.
Good, good.
My mood has not been worse since then, fortunately.
Did you hear I took up some residence under some of the bridges of town here in Bridge Troll himself, Matt McNeil?
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Well, I was over walking on the riverfront there. I got to admit, Minneapolis graffiti artists, magnifique. You guys getting good out there. They're pretty good. There was one guy that did something out on 94 right out of the tunnel. One of the boards. I was like, wow, that's actually pretty good. I hope they keep it. Nope. They went and sandblasted it off there. Nothing wrong with a little graffiti.
When they get up on some of these high bridges, though, I wonder how they get up there and actually get the time to do those without being noticed.
The 94 bridge over the river right by Huron, all right? Go walk under there. Someone got way up there on each of the individual piers and did it one letter. Who in the world got up there? I mean, and how did nobody notice he was up there for, I'm going to guess, weeks doing this?
That's what always confuses me about, though. I mean, it's great art, but how do you get the time to get up there and not get noticed or caught by the police or anything?
Some of them are actually really good.
Yeah, like Spider-Man doing these things?
Have to be. Well, I mean, I think that he must have come off the top of the bridge. And there must be a walkway under there to, like, maintain them. Or web slingers. I'm going to guess it's one of the two. But he did. You got to go see that. Seriously. So go park down by the rowing, by the Minnesota Rowing down there, and then walk down. It's a beautiful trail. And especially in the next 2 weeks, it's going to be absolutely spectacular down there. But go take a look at this. Like, how did you do that? Because there's no way I know. And like I said, talented. I mean, it's. I hope they can take this and turn it into a decent career. That's for sure. So there has been a Facebook alert that has been going around, social media alerts, telling people to not A, leave their car unlocked, and B, running. Now, okay, this is a big problem apparently, and apparently it is. That the reason, one of the reasons why the carjackings have taken off, the theft of vehicles, is people are basically serving up the car for a freebie. If I come across a gas station and you have left a car running unlocked, I mean, well, unlocked, period, but running and unlocked, my God. I mean, I'm going to steal your car just out of principle at that point, just to teach you a lesson.
Might as well have steal me on the back of your car, for God's sake.
I think of that Seinfeld episode when they had the car with the BO, and he just comes over to the guys and just chucks the keys in the car and walks away. What are you doing? Well, okay, so I got to put this out here. You heard about the fan van, right? They found the fan van. Authorities uncovered the University of Minnesota's alums' stolen tailgating fan van 5 days after someone drove it off with it in Minneapolis. I'm guessing the beer is gone if there was a kegger in there. The 1995 maroon and gold Ford Ecoline 250, because nothing says sexy like an Ecoline, was taken around 6 p.m. Saturday from outside the offices of True North Equity Partners, the 800 block of Southeast 11th Avenue, said Brian Slipka, the investment firm CEO and U alumni. Okay, so 800 block of Southeast 11th. So that's going to be crossing by the U. It's going to be by the U. It's up in that area, right?
I think so, yeah.
You're in the freaking city. Okay, I will get to that in a second. Police says it was tracked down to Golden Valley and retrieved on Thursday. No arrests have been announced. Oh, the poor fan van. Help. I'm lonely. I'm in the suburbs. They don't do tailgating out here. Find my home. Someone heard about the theft, and because it's not exactly the hardest vehicle to ID here.
Why is the fan van in the neighborhood there?
It's like, oh, hey, I'm going to guess it's that car over there, that 1995 Ecoline. I might be wrong. I could be wrong, but I'm going to guess. Someone heard about the theft through the news reports and notified authorities, according to Slipka. The van was moved to an impound lot in Crystal. It's a bad day for that van. He said, adding that it was unaware of its condition as of late Friday morning. Oh, something tells me it does not smell good. The fan van's taking a turn.
Why would they take it to the impound lot? Wouldn't they pretty much know that that's the fan van? I mean, you don't like impound the Oscar Wire Wienermobile if that gets stolen.
I mean, they do. It's like, well, you say this is the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. We have to see a proof of ownership before we're going to lease this car. How would you even tow that thing? Well, you have to pay extra. All right, surveillance video from outside the, okay, I want you to listen to this. Surveillance video from outside True North's building showed two men running to the van, hopping in, and driving away. Okay. Are you saying you left the fan van unlocked and running? Or at least the keys in the ignition of the fan van? Like I said, I might want to steal it myself just out of principle. What are you doing? How can you be this dumb? Don't do that.
How does that save you any time? Oh, I have to spend an extra second putting the key in the ignition. It takes up so much time.
I got a car now that starts with a push button. I can't tell you how many times I'm like, trying to put the key in. But the reality is, I mean, how are you leaving a car unlocked in the city of Minneapolis and say, or St. Paul, or for that matter, Wayzata or Woodbury, or what are you doing? You know, you're just asking for someone to break into your car. Because I have been out in, where I was in Waconia. I went out years ago. I was out there as a wine bar I went out to. Yes, because that's me, Matt McNeil, Johnny Wine Bar. I went out to a wine bar out there years ago, and someone had come in and said, hey, someone had been going through all the cars in the parking lot. In Waconia. Well, not my car. You know why? Because I had locked it. That's why. He was going through and seeing who is unlocked. And you can go in there and grab, you know, people got coins, got sunglasses, got cell phones. It's amazing how many things people will leave out on a counter or on a seat in a car.
I wonder if you were to go through a parking lot, the percentage of cars that would be unlocked. What do you think that would be?
I've seen people in parking ramps downtown do that, where it's clear that someone is going on. I've gone down. It's like, you need to get someone up there. You know, get a broom. Get out. Knock it out. But I mean, it's like, how are you doing this? You're in the heart of the city. There's crime. You're just, okay, they're not going to steal the fan van? Oh, good thinking. They will steal the Oscar Mayer oatmeal. I would steal the Oscar Mayer. If it was left running with the doors open, oh, in a heartbeat. Bye. I don't know what's the maximum speed you think I could get on
that
hot dog.
Come home with the family and say, look at the new car I got. Hey, kids, you wanted a new car. This is what you got.
Meanwhile, my neighbor, Minneapolis police, you're saying you're looking for a large hot dog-shaped car. Well, I might have a lead for you here. I'm not sure if that's the Johnsonville car or if it's the Oscar Mayer car, but it's a wiener-shaped vehicle. There you go. Don't know why my neighbor sounds like a creepy guy. Hi there. I'm a police officer. I'm hiding in my own house. Now, you lock your car. Do not leave your keys in your car, and do not leave your car running. There was one guy, 94 in Lexington. You know that gas station that's over there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's right on the north side there. He pulled it in, left it. He left the car running. What are you doing? And the car was stolen. And he had the audacity to tell St. Paul police, oh, I can't believe someone stole it. Okay, you deserve that. Boy, what are you doing? Well, it's you can't trust anyone. No, and you shouldn't. It's a car.
What time does it save to leave your car unlocked and with the keys in the ignition? It saves you, what, maybe 3 seconds at
most?
You get no benefit from it.
Apparently, this is a problem. Parents, raise your kids right. I mean, I'm kind of, very lock, constantly. I am really hyper.
Oh, so you're walking the car, yeah, just beeping the whole time.
I can't tell you how many times I know I've locked the car. I'm almost to the front of the store. It's like, did I lock the car? And I have to, son of a, and I go back and I have to lock it again. Do it. Because why? Because I live in a city. That's why.
It's like Roadrunner when you're walking anywhere in a parking lot. So you're just beeping your car.
Beep, beep, beep.
Making sure it's locked.
Is my fan van getting taken? Yeah, no, my fan van is not getting taken. Who are we going to be talking with today?
We've got Brad Coker with Mason Dixon. They've been doing all of these Minnesota polls that you've been seeing released recently by Star Tribune, Care 11. They all got together and did these. So we're going to chat about these results, kind of what they mean for 2022, and we good conversation.
All right, there we go. We got that Brett Johnson interview right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson back with you here on a Friday afternoon. So as you've probably seen released over the past few days, a number of polls have been released in Minnesota asking questions to Minnesotans about approval ratings for Joe Biden, for Tim Walz, views on the January 6th insurrection attempt, whether the 2020 election was legitimate or not. So figure we need to break down what's been in these polls that have been released. So happy to be joined by Brad Coker. He is the managing director at Mason Dixon Polling Strategy, who is in charge of conducting a number of these Minnesota polls that were released the last few days, as he joins us now on the show. Hi, Brad. How are you doing today?
Really good. Look forward to talking with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive into the approval ratings we're seeing for Joe Biden in the state of Minnesota, because right now, for the first time, they are underwater by a 51 to 47% margin, where 51% of Minnesotans don't approve of Biden's job, while 47% do. What's been causing this drop in approval rating as we dive into some of these numbers?
Well, the numbers in Minnesota are very consistent with polling nationwide and in other states. If you look at the national polls right now, Biden's approval rating tends to run between maybe 42 and 44, 45%. In Minnesota, it's 47, so he's doing a little bit better than he's doing in other parts of the country and other states. But, that's to be expected given the Minnesota leans Democratic. And, he won the state by 6 percentage points last year. So I don't see any numbers on the statewide level that surprised me. But when you dig into the details, you can kind of start to see where he's starting to come apart. And it's really sort of narrowly focused. I took a look at the exit poll numbers that the networks did on Election Day 2020, and the places where his numbers have dropped versus what he received on Election Day are really kind of narrowly focused. His numbers among women are about the same as they were when he got elected, but his disapproval rating, most of that increase has come among men. So he's hemorrhaging support among men. And you asked me about reasons for this. Obviously, Afghanistan comes into play. Most people will agree that turned into a bit of a mess for them. Inflation is starting to hit people. You're seeing interest rates now going up in the last week or so. And, you know, there's all kinds of economic signals out there that show some dark clouds on the horizon. And I think experience shows that when you're dealing with a president, the economy just always becomes the biggest voting issue if people are uncomfortable or start to feel, you know, unease. So I think that's the reason for it. And if you look at where the drops are, it's among men, it's among suburban voters, and it's really, really big among people who identify as independent. So people who identify as Democrat are primarily staying with Biden, over 90%. People who identify as Republican are against Biden, over 90%. Again, consistent with how they voted, but Biden got 55% of the independent vote, and he now has a 62% disapproval rating with independent voters. So that jumps out, sticks out like a sore thumb. And the other group I looked at is he carried voters between the ages of 35 and 49, but now his disapproval rating pretty much mirrors the state, 48 approve, 51 disapprove, whereas his numbers with that age group kind of mirrored the statewide result. About 52-46 when, you know, on election day. So it's, you know, it's a lot of people, but it's sort of coming from three or four very specific areas. The suburbs, men, voters sort of in that 35 to 49 range, and people who say they're they're independent or unaffiliated. So that's sort of that story in a nutshell.
Well, another area where we saw some major divides in terms of Biden's approval rating was that, well, in the two most populous counties in Minnesota, Hennepin and Ramsey County, which of course encompass Minneapolis and St. Paul, he has a 69% approval rating, which is very solid. But once we start to leave Hennepin and Ramsey County, that's where those numbers start to drop, where he's at 38% in the metro suburbs, 33% in southern Minnesota, 35% in northern Minnesota. Now, I know we've heard for a while that there definitely is a geographical divide, but these are some pretty stark divides. Is this common typically in what we see for presidential approval ratings at the state level, or is this kind of a new phenomenon?
Not really. I mean, northern and southern Minnesota, they were over 60% for Trump. So those numbers really have not moved that much. You know, 33, 35, that's pretty consistent, you know, with, you know, what happened on Election Day. There's probably been a little bit of a loss there. But, you know, those voters there were strong Trump voters. They're not, they've obviously not changed their minds. Hennepin Ramsey, again, it's pretty close to what he got on Election Day. But, yeah, the suburbs, as I mentioned, all of those counties that surround the Twin Cities, that's where he's losing support. I think he carried the suburbs by a couple percentage points, maybe 52%, 53%, and that's plunged, you know, 15 points. So, you know, that really jumped out. It's really the suburbs where he's taken the hit.
So obviously, as Democrats take a look at these approval ratings for Joe Biden, which are underwater in Minnesota, and we can also dive into the ratings for Tim Walz, Governor Tim Walz, which have taken a dip. But going back to the presidential approval ratings, Democrats are looking at these numbers and probably thinking, well, this isn't good news for 2022. But how do Biden's approval ratings in Minnesota and even beyond, we can even take this national, how do they compare to how, let's say, Obama was doing back in the fall of 2009 or Bill Clinton was doing in the fall of 1993? Or even if we look at Bush and Trump and their approval ratings just a little less than 1 year into there.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't put Trump there because Trump was, divisive from the start. I mean, what his approval rating his first day in office was pretty much the same as Election Day 4 years later. They didn't move a whole lot. He was quite polarizing. No, if you compare to Clinton and Obama, two Democratic presidents at this point in time, and you go back and do comparison, Biden's numbers are far, far worse. You know, Obama was able to carry approval ratings in Minnesota probably close to 60%. spent at least through his first year and a half of office. I think, you know, the Obamacare might have pulled them down once they started getting into that health care debate. And Clinton was able to stay relatively popular throughout. So, yeah, clearly Biden's in much worse shape than Obama was and Clinton was at this point in their administrations.
So if the numbers do end up turning around for Biden over the next year or so, as we look deeper into the data, what would be some of the first clues we could look at in terms of movement that might show that, well, there could be a change on the horizon for the better for Biden and the Democrats?
Well, independent voters. I mean, the one thing that's been very consistent about polls, not just in Minnesota, but polls I've done in other states, is identify with a political party, because we ask them, you know, do you consider yourself a Democrat or Republican or something else, and independent or other. And people who say they're a Democrat, they're sticking with Biden, and 93% of them approve. People who say they're Republican are 95% against him. And then you've got that a third of the electorate, which always decides the outcome in any race in Minnesota. They went for Biden. A majority of them went for Biden, and now over 60% of them are disapproving of the job he's doing. But I will qualify that a little bit. If you also go back and look at the exit polling, one of the questions they asked was, of Biden supporters, are you primarily casting your ballot for Joe Biden, or are you casting it against Donald Trump? And about a third of Biden's voters said they weren't necessarily voting for Biden, they were voting against Trump. So there has always been a little bit of softness to the Biden simply because he got this big chunk of anti-Trump voters, and they would have been mostly independents. So some of those numbers, there may be a little, you know, the water may be a little murky on some of these things. But, you know, if Biden's going to come back, he's going to have to win back independent voters. And, you know, it's not like it's a small margin right now. I mean, 34 approve, 62 disapprove. That's going to take a big shift to start to move him back. Now, how it affects other Democrats, I think it's going to be a big factor in swing congressional districts, purple districts, and in Senate races where, you know, states are fairly competitive. I don't know if there's a congressional district in Minnesota off the top of my head that will swing back and forth from election to election. So, you know, it may not play a big role in who is in the Minnesota delegation afterwards, but I can rattle off in parts of the Midwest and some parts of the West and even in a couple in California that, you know, they'll probably flip.
Of course, redistricting plays a role because many of these districts might not look exactly like they do right now. So certainly still lots more to unpack as we head into 2022. A couple more final questions for you here, Brad. Again, we're speaking with Brad Coker. He is the managing director at Mason Dixon Polling and Strategy, who have recently conducted a number of Minnesota polls over the past few days. And something you said a few minutes ago was that how Biden's support among Democrats can be kind of classified as being soft, where more people were voting against Trump than for Joe Biden. Now, for the Republican side, that could be a little concerning as they head into 2022, because if Trump remains kind of the figurehead of the Republican Party and remains front and center, well, all of a sudden, maybe that opens the door for the Democrats to do a little bit better than they typically would, because as I imagine, Trump's numbers are still not that great in states like Minnesota or around the country.
Well, we don't know in Minnesota, but I would generally agree with you that if Trump's the nominee, that anti-Trump vote, which right now may not be approving of Biden, they may come back. Assuming Biden's the nominee, I mean, there are, you know, legitimate reasons to think that, you know, he may only, you know, serve the one term, and that, you know, 3.5 years from now, the Democrats will find another candidate. And I think, you know, a lot of that's based on his age. So, you know, that's another wild card, is we're not, you know, we can't be sure that Biden's going to be the Democrat either. So that's what makes this whole thing very interesting. I will note one thing. There was a national poll, and I'm not exactly sure who did it. I think it was Harris. It was a Harris poll. Actually had Trump's favorability at 48 nationwide and Biden's at 46. So I don't know if that means that there's been a huge surge for Trump, but, you know, he sort of has a there's a line he won't go below, and you know, right now it's risen a little bit higher. So, you know, everything's relative.
And final question for you here, Brad. This is what I always kind of find interesting, and what I know confounded a lot of political prognosticators back in 2020 were people who voted for Joe Biden in the presidential election and those who voted for Republicans down ballot. And I think we're even seeing some of that in your polling data that was released in Minnesota over the past few days, where, as we talked about, Biden's approval rating is underwater, 51-47. But Governor Tim Walz, even though his numbers are down a little bit from last September, he's still above water with a 49% approval versus 44% disapproval. What do we know about these types of voters that are, let's say, against Biden right now, but are still saying Governor Tim Walz is still doing a good job? Because at least to the to conventional wisdom in politics, it's kind of a unique group of people that we don't often think about that, well, disapprove of Biden, but actually are relatively happy with the job Governor Walz is doing.
Well, Biden and Walz are sort of in two different situations. You know, Walz is dealing with state issues. Biden's dealing with federal issues. If you're running for Senate or House of Representatives, you're going to get tied to Biden because it's the same pool of issues that people are looking at. Governors deal with different issues. It's more local. They're very visible, and they're doing things that affect people in a much closer way. So if you're a governor running for re-election, you usually can separate yourself from the presidential candidate, unless you're just as unpopular. Walz's numbers, they're down several percentage points. He typically ran in the low to mid 50s at least, and now he's at 49. What I would caution there is that those numbers will look different when they actually have the name of his challenger. So approve or disapprove of Tim Walz is a nice benchmark to have right now, but ultimately elections will come down to between a choice of two candidates. And, California, for example, the summer polling showed that, you know, whether or not Gavin Newsom was going to be recalled was a coin flip. And then Larry Elder jumped into the other side of the ballot. Who would you vote for if Newsom is recalled? And instead of it being a decision whether or not to keep Gavin Newsom, the Democrats in California were able to turn it into, do you want Newsom or do you want Elder? And now all of a sudden you had, somebody you could go against and start talking about their record, their background. And, of course, California is maybe the bluest state of all. It became much, much easier for Newsom's people to get him to keep his seat because it was, here's the real choice. The real choice isn't do you like Gavin Newsom or do you hate Gavin Newsom. It is do you want to trade out Gavin Newsom for this guy? And you'll see the same thing in Minnesota. If the Republicans put up a good candidate, this could become a pretty interesting race given where Walz's numbers are right now. But if the Republicans don't put up somebody who can appeal to independent voters and do better than other nominees have done in recent elections, and then Walz is probably a pretty strong favorite, you know, provided he doesn't, you know, completely implode on something between now and next year.
Absolutely. Well, still lots to look forward to in 2022, but at least got a good snapshot of kind of what's happening today from some of these polls that have been conducted in Minnesota. Again, we've been speaking with Brad Coker. He is the managing Mason Dixon Polling and Strategy, who has been conducting a number of polls in Minnesota over the past few days as we've been chatting with him about some of those results. Brad, really appreciate the time today. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
All right, let's take a break and send things back to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. Thanks, Brad. Appreciate that. I got to get into the entire Arizona audit. Plus, apparently, the stupids are wearing off on one of our dumber House reps in the state, Grunhagen. Grunhagen. I'll get to that here in a little bit. But I want to remind everyone about the Arizona audit, which, by the way, comically has come to an end, finding more votes for Biden and less votes for Trump. I know. Now, two things. And I've said this from the get-go, because most of the people that have been are smarter analysts about this stuff than I am have said it sure seemed the main goal of the people behind it, cyber ninjas and those guys, was to get their hands on the voter databases for the state of Arizona. And the reason why is those things are gold. Those things are gold. You can sell those databases to marketers, to advertisers, to political campaigns. And in this day and age where they basically are you know, trying to get hyper accurate marketing, to have that database is a huge asset. And you can really gear, you know, whatever your campaign you're working on, whether it's a private advertisement or a political campaign, you can gear things to it directly. So there is, it seems to me, from the experts I have read, that the main goal of this by the private entities that were taking advantage of the Republicans in Arizona strapping on their knee pads for Trump is that they basically saw a money-making opportunity. And there's, as people have said, you know, there a lot of data was shipped to cyber ninjas' boss's house or whatever it is, the compound up in Montana, and, you know, that he has all that information. So they're going to make a ton of money off that. And this is why basically they want to do more of this, because they want the databases, because that's money in this day and age. Also, it should be noted that the original plan that the Republicans proposed was that the cyber ninja people, the people that were going to be holding the recount, were going to go into a private room, all data, all the election equipment, and come on out and tell you what happened. And when the election people said, no, you can't go in there without monitors, we're not going to allow you to have unfettered access to our voting machines or any of that stuff, or any of the data, that you're going to have monitors there, so we can't have people, because you can't have people sticking ballots in, and people are like, yeah, we got to have make sure it's monitored. The second all of a sudden this became, I mean, and it was delusional to think that they were going to be able to perform that audit in that manner in the first place. But that's what they wanted to do, because they were going to come on out with their findings that showed, and I did air quotes there on findings, findings that showed, oh, well, Trump was robbed. Well, when they couldn't do that, all they could really do is count the real votes. And in even the Cyber Ninja CEO, by the way, Cyber Ninja CEO Doug Logan on today admitted that his team of auditors made a mistake when they claimed that they had found more than 74,000 phantom mail-in ballots. During a presentation of the Arizona audit's findings, Logan explained they'd mistakenly claimed that Maricopa County, Arizona, had counted 74,000 additional mail-in ballots with no record of them having ever been sent because they're rushed for time, as reported by ABC 15 polling analyst Garrett Archer. Logan says that the 74K error that was made in the summer was because their analysts were quick, since they were trying to justify canvassing. Daniel Dale earlier in the year explained that the supposed phantom mail-in ballots were not mail-in ballots at all, but were rather ballots from people who had voted in person, even though they had requested mail-in ballots as a precaution in case they weren't able to go to the polls. The county uses two early voting files that are not meant to be used for forensic audits, Dale explained on CNN in the past July. One of them were ballots requested by voters. One is ballots submitted by voters. The ballots requested file stops getting updated on October 23rd of the year, but the ballot submitted file keeps getting updated with in-person voters until 10 days later. You have thousands and thousands of in-person ballot voters coming between October 24th and the day before the election. There was no there. But it didn't stop them from trying to make it seem like, oh, we got them now. Of course, everyone's been waiting to hear from the moron in charge in this whole thing, Kelly Ward. She's the GOP chairwoman who's pushed this entire idea. And funny story, this is going to be a hoot. Once again, the Trump people's own audit of a Republican-led initiative in Arizona, which went for Biden. They found more votes for Biden and fewer votes for Trump. So it got worse for Trump in Arizona. Here is Kelly Ward. Backed audit of ballots in Maricopa County, and Trump supporters were hoping to confirm the widespread election fraud in Arizona ended. Not only did they fail to find substantial fraud, they actually slightly revised down the number of Trump ballots and up the number of Biden ballots. Arizona GOP Chairwoman Kelly Ward had a different conclusion. On Friday, she called for a do-over of the whole thing. Wow. Her tweet, amazing report from Dr. Shiva. Many questions for Maricopa County, as well as exposure of incompetence and possible malfeasance. A full signature audit is absolutely necessary. Hashtag America's audit. Dr. Shiva is an election conspiracy theorist and anti-vaccine truther who has claimed that he was the inventor of an email and that inventor of email and that Dr. Anthony Fauci is a deep state agent. He was hired by the Arizona State Senate to take part in the audit. Wow. The audit swiftly grew controversial due to the selective access to right-wing news outlets on that. Well, don't need to go into that. I will say right now there's a fairly large rally going outside the Capitol by rightos. It's an anti-vaxxer rally, but a bunch of election conspiracists have shown up as well, including a bunch of like three presenters, Oath Keepers, Proud Boys. And yeah, it is amazing. Maricopa County officials on Friday afternoon responded to details to claims made by cyber ninjas in the $6 million six-month audit. $6 million they wasted on this. $6 million. An audit of Arizona County ballots from the 2020 presidential election. Late Thursday night, multiple news organizations reported that Cyber Ninja's audit officially released Friday afternoon found Joe Biden did indeed win the election in Arizona. Donald Trump, the company concluded, it got less votes. But the devil in the details, and after six frustrating months of dealing with the company and reporting that zero expense expertise in auditing elections, Maricopa County officials blasted some of the critical concerns Cyber Ninjas claimed in the report. Via a lengthy series of tweets, Maricopa County officials destroyed Cyber Ninjas' audit, which has been called fraudit and a sham. An example calling it intentionally misleading or staggeringly ignorant, Maricopa County blasted Cyber Ninjas and GOP state senators over the claim and concern that 23,344 mail-in ballots voted from a prior address. Military people and overseas voters can cast a federal-only ballot despite living outside the United States. The side of their ballot would be in their prior address in Arizona. People who are allowed to move from one house to another or even one state to another in October and November of an election year. Yes, shocking. If the driver's license address matches the voter registration address, they are still allowed to vote. For the November general election, Maricopa County had 20,933 one-time temporary address requests. In addition, snowbirds and college residents tend to have forwarding addresses when they are out of the country. Mail-in ballots are not forwarded to another address. In another, what they call laughable, that Cyber Ninjas concerned that the state of more than 7 million people, yes, some of them share names and birth years. Basically, they're saying that some people voted, like there's a Joe Smith who was born in 1942, voted in one county, and there's happens to be a Joe Smith who was also born in 1942 and voted in another county. That's not necessarily the same person. If Cyber and Ninjas understood data analysis, they would have performed standard process to rule out situations that could lead to faulty conclusions, the county officials added. It's just the stupidest thing. And once again, this is what they were all, wait until Arizona, wait until we get the results in Arizona. Oh, it's going to show us everything. It's going to show Donald Trump won by 1 billion votes in Arizona, 1 billion. It's going to show that. And now that they, their own audit, because they were not allowed to do an audit where they basically were going into a closed room with no one watching what they were doing, all of a sudden their own audit finds that Biden won the state by even a larger margin. Now it's also, well, it clearly was not a very well done audit. We need to do it again. Like I said, what did I just say last hour? These people are delusional. They're delusional. The idea of them admitting we were wrong is so hard for them, they will laughingly go along with another audit and act as if now we're going to get to the bottom of the truth of the matter. And my guess is right now there's a 50-50 chance in Arizona there will be another audit. Now, will there be an audit in Minnesota? Let me bring up the human catcher's mitt, Glenn Grunhagen. He apparently, the representative from Glencoe, has decided to chime in, or as I like to say, Grunhagen. It kind of dries out the throat when I do that, man. It's a little tough. A Minnesota lawmaker is resurfacing months-old unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud, drawing sharp criticism from the Secretary of State. Did you vote count in 2020? Said, you know, Representative Glenn Grunhagen, a.k.a. Monkey's Ass, at the start of the September 21, 2021 video posted on YouTube with the title Minnesota Integrity. The six-term Republican from Glencoe, who handily won election that year, then goes on to suggest that 39% of the ballots in the state were not connected to a registered voter as of November 29, 2020, which was after the election was certified. The figure includes 700,000 absentee ballots. He then calls for a forensic audit to find out what the actual vote count was. A spokesperson for the Minnesota Secretary of State's office, Steve Simon, pointed to comments Simon provided to the Minnesota Reformer. Simon described the fraud allegations as unsubstantiated garbage. Where is Grunhagen getting these pulled from his caboose figures? In the video, he refers to a video from January 18, 2021, posted by a group called Midwest Swamp Watch. In the video, the presenter pulls data from two sources, the 2020 State Canvassing Board report filed on November 24th, 2020, and the registered voter file history provided via a public records request. The presenter compares the vote totals in the former to the registered voter totals in the latter to come up with a gap of 1.28 million ballots not connecting to a registered voter. The channel describes these as missing votes, making up 38.9% of all the votes cast in the state during the 2020 general election. The Secretary of State's office said this is a case of misinterpreting records, intentionally doing so, and cited a comment on the YouTube's video that said explains the mistake. Essentially, the presenter incorrectly conflates the two different databases. Accepted absentee ballots recorded immediately in the statewide voter registration system and publicly available historical voter records and have two distinct purposes. The latter can be updated as much as 6 weeks after the election. Simon, to the Reformer, said spreading this type of fraud misinformation is careless, foolish, irresponsible, and has real potential of misleading people. So that's what's so poisonous about that. The Star Tribune poll published on Thursday found that over one in every four Minnesotans still believe Joe Biden did not legitimately win the election. Well, that's why Grunhagen is doing this, is he saw those polling numbers and he knows, well, in my district, it's probably closer to 60-40. They think that Biden was, I'm going to go out there and do this. That'd be my guess. The percentage was generally higher outside of the Twin Cities metro area. All regions, at least half the respondents, said yes, Biden definitely won the election. Despite explicit allegations and repeated intimidation claiming voter fraud during 2020 election, there is no evidence 10 months later of widespread voter fraud anywhere in the U.S. End of story. But, I mean, it is interesting. Grunhagen is suggesting that a video, if you see a video and it says something which they clearly seem to have manipulated the data to try to make it seem like something is going on. So there was fraud intent, intentional fraud on the minds of the people that made the initial video. But what Gruenhagen says is that regardless of intentional fraud or intentionally misrepresenting numbers, that if a video says something, that there should be a full investigation. So I would love for someone on a video to say that Glenn Gruenhagen is a monkey's ass, because then I'm going to call for a full investigation to see exactly how much primate butt cheek is in Glenn Gruenhagen. I think that's just science. They said it in a video on YouTube. We need to have a full investigation. So if anyone knows of a video where Glenn Gruenhagen is called a monkey's ass, let me know about it. Because under Glenn Gruenhagen's standards for investigation, that's enough for us to call out the health department to go over and find out exactly what Glenn Gruenhagen is made of. Sounds good to me. Okay, what's the over-under on how much monkey's ass is in that dude, man? I mean, his face is huge. I mean, I could at least 3 or 4 cheeks worth there, maybe. I'm just guessing. Once again, it's your standard of investigation. So if anyone has a video, any kind of video that says Glenn Gruenhagen's a monkey's ass, I think we should have an immediate investigation into that standard. That's apparently the standard Glenn Gruenhagen says. If it's good enough for Glenn, it's good enough for me. 952-946-6205. Am I wrong? I thought that's what the standard was. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. By the way, Primate Butt Cheek was my goth band I was in the 1980s. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Seriously, if that's the standard, that all you have to do is see a video on YouTube that makes a claim that we should have a full investigation into it. If I see a video that says Glenn Gruenhagen is a monkey's ass, well then I think there should be a full investigation in what exactly is the genetic makeup of one representative Glenn Gruenhagen. Is he a monkey's ass? I mean, we should find out. It would explain some things. I mean, it really, it would. I mean, but I don't know. I'm just looking for what's the standard for stopping the state and investigating. And if it's just a YouTube video, well, my gosh, I think we're going to have a lot of investigations going in here. I really think that that's the case. So now don't start it quite yet. Don't start quite yet. Earlier this week, of course, it is Friday. So we've got to do some dancing. It's a Friday, especially dancing on the grave of that Arizona audit. Mwah! Mwah! I tried to find a song that was going to wait, but nothing seemed to match something we came across earlier. Now, if you watch the video feed, and I'm going to encourage you to quickly head on over to Facebook on either the AM 950 radio page or the Progressive Citizen X page, I'm going to have a dance partner for this one, because it is the dance remix of Mike Lindell done by those dudes on YouTube, where there should be a full investigation. How much of this did actually Mike Lindell, remix himself? I think that should be a full investigation. The Gruenhagen standard. I mean, come on. It's the Gruenhagen standard. Primate butt cheek, my friend. Primate butt cheek. Let's dance into the Friday. Have a good one. We got Native Roots Radio coming up next. Until Monday, see ya.
Cyber expert. How do I know? I don't know.
My pillow guy.
How do I know? I don't know. I'm not a cyber expert. How do I know? I don't know.
I sell pillows. Give me a break.
No, we're not going on a break. Put up that movie again. Run the movie. There's no breaks.
But I ain't eating. I'm staying up here for 72 hours live streaming. So around the world.
Here's what the Huffington Post wrote. The My Pillow guy ranted against taking a lunch break. Mike Lindell says he's going to stay up 72 hours. Did you guys hear me say that? No. It's a story of the American dream. I was thrown into this ex-crack addict. Going from a crack addict to sitting up here on the stage for the world. I represent all.
How do I know?
I don't know. I'm not a cyber expert. How do I know? I don't know.
My pillow guy.
How do I know? I don't know. I'm not a cyber expert. How do I know?
I don't know. I sell pillows. Give me a break. Everybody needs to watch this. It's even going to be more meaningful to our country.
Run a video real quick.
The video meme.
The router video.
Video meme. M-E-M-E.
The county has refused to produce the network routers. We want the routers, Sonny. The county refused to produce the network routers. When it was routers.
Have you seen that rap video?
That sounds pretty gotcha.
The remix, well, their quote is, we just like on everyone. Have at it, guys. All over me.
How do I know? I don't know.
I'm not a cyber expert.
How do I know? I don't know.
My pillow guy.
How do I know? I don't know.
I'm not a cyber expert.
How do I know? I don't know.
I still